And all of Eden has to be behind us. Rich and poor. First and second children alike. That's why it's so vitally important that Aaron Albaz's name remain untarnished. They won't all get behind me, or Flint. But Albaz is someone everyone can believe in. We need to have the people on our side. But then the major shift has to come from within. The ones in power have to concede to it, and give up their power to the people. It sounds impossible. Why would they do that? We won't give them any choice, he says, and the steel in his voice makes me tense up. He feels it in my hand. Don't worry. I'll make sure you're kept out of it. After tomorrow, that is. Once you take me to the cybersurgeon, you can relax and enjoy being a real member of a welcoming society for the first time. He flops back on the bed, still holding my hand, smiling up at me. But I don't think that's fair. What if I want to help? I ask. There must be something I can do. He looks proud of me for making the suggestion, and I feel a little glow inside. But he says, You've been through enough. Not more than you, I press. But no one should have to go through that much. If we win, no one ever will again. Peace, safety, prosperity, for everyone in Eden. I look down at him, lying on the bed, weary and impassioned, and I'm overcome with a mad impulse. I remember Lark's kiss in that quiet moment together. The way it haunts me, confuses me, elates me. And I wonder, would kissing Lachlan be the same? He sits up suddenly, as if he just realized his vulnerability. I have something for you. He fumbles in a pocket and pulls out something. He holds it out in his closed hand. All I can see is a bit of cord woven in and out of his fingers. I put out my hand, and he covers it with his own, letting his knuckles rest there a moment before uncurling his fingers. I feel something drop into my palm. When I look, I find a stunning piece of pale pink crystal, 2 inches long, its 6 sides beautifully smooth. It's so clear. I hold it up and look at Lachlan through it. His face is softened to rose tones. Every second child has a piece of crystal from the cavern. It's a symbol of our unity. You're one of us now. It's lovely, I say, stroking the cool stone. It's perfect. Overwhelmed by the gift, and more by what it implies, I lean toward him, intending to kiss his cheek. At the last moment, he turns his head just a bit, and my lips touch his. Just the lightest touch. I don't retreat. Our eyes lock. Second child eyes. And I hover, his breath on my mouth, waiting to see what he'll do. What I'll do. The memory of Lark's kiss fills me, then fades a little as I look at Lachlan. I have no idea what I want. But Lachlan does. Suddenly his hand is in my hair, pulling me to him in a kiss that is fierce, delightful, frightening in its intensity. I feel wildly alive. But as I reach to take his face in my own hands, his fingers twine in my hair and pull me back. I gasp. You should get some sleep before we leave, he says firmly, though I notice his breath is coming fast, too, and his pupils are huge and luminous. I know what he means, of course, but I pretend I don't. I don't want to be alone. Good idea, I say, and I stretch myself in the bed beside him, my head nestled in the crook of his arm. I can hear his heart racing. He doesn't tell me to leave. Though my body is comfortable, I am also too tense with the strangeness of it to fall asleep right away. My mind is worrying, bouncing from the terrible truth I discovered about Eden's hero, to the kiss, to Lark, and back again. As I listen to the soothing sound of his steady breathing, my mind clears. My body relaxes. And I fall asleep. I wake with a jolt, thinking someone's trying to break the door down. I'm confused. First, not to be in my own bed at home, then even more so when I realize Lachlan is lying beside me. I've thrown an arm over him in my sleep, and he peels it off to roll over my belly and spring to his feet. His gun is in his hand. "What's wrong?" he asks as he pulls the door open. The same words he spoke to me when I knocked. He must always be on edge, waiting for the worst. I shrink back, suddenly aware that I'm in Lachlan's bed in the middle of the night. Fully dressed, to be sure, but whoever is at the door is going to think. "We can't find Rowan." It's Flint's voice, and he sounds angry. "She's not in her room, not in any of the common rooms. You said she could be trusted. If she slipped out and betrays us..." With an inscrutable smile on his face, Lachlan slowly pushes the door all the way open, revealing me sitting awkwardly on his bed. "Oh," Flint says, and looks at Lachlan with raised eyebrows. "It's not..." Lachlan and I both begin at the same time, but Flint interrupts. "Get up, Rowan. I need you. Now." He starts toward me. "What's this about?" Lachlan asks, and I notice that he subtly imposes himself between Flint and me. I am indescribably touched by the instinctive protective gesture. "We've captured an intruder snooping around the tunnels." "What do you need Rowan for?" Lachlan asks, glancing back at me. "You'll see." Baffled, I smooth my disheveled hair and follow him. Lachlan stays close at my side. Once, I think I see his hand start to reach for mine, but he seems to check himself. Still, it's good to have him so close. Flint leads us swiftly around the gallery and down two flights of stone steps. I stop dead when I recognize our destination. The interrogation chamber. I can feel the wet back suffocating me, and I have to bend over, breathless, hugging myself as I try to breathe. Lachlan has an arm around me, bends low beside me. "In through your nose, out through your mouth. Slow, easy. You're going to be okay." It takes a minute, but my breathing returns to something like normal. I stand up straight and try and maintain my dignity, but it's hard when I remember the torture I received in that room. Flint enters first, then Lachlan. He blocks my view with his shoulders, but I can see two people inside. One, a woman I met briefly beneath the camphor tree, holds something in her hand that looks like a small sock filled with sand. The other person is tied to the chair and has a bag over their head, and my lungs convulse again, though I keep myself visibly under control. I see bare arms covered with bruises. And as I watch, the underground woman, Flora, that was her name, cocks her arm back and hits the prisoner on the shoulder. The prisoner groans. "Please." The gasp is muffled under the soaking bag. But I know that voice. Know the down of golden hair on those poor bruised arms. "Lark!" I shout and surge toward her. Flint grabs me roughly by the shoulders and forces me back. Her head inside the bag turns toward me. Suddenly I see her entire body go rigid, straining tightly against her bonds. I pull against Flint, but he won't let me go. Then Lark's body starts trembling spasmodically. Her head thrashes back and forth, and after a long moment, her body goes completely stiff again, then slack. "She has epilepsy!" I cry out, kicking uselessly at Flint's shins. "Let me help her!" "Did you lead her here?" Flint growls, ignoring my struggles. And I remember that this is the man who tortured me. He's been so pleasant ever since, his tone cordial and inspiring. Now I recall the voice of my interrogator, and I try to shrink away from him, but he holds me in an iron grip and shakes me. "Did you send her a message? Who is she? Who is she working for?" "Let her go," Lachlan says, and if his voice is soft, his intentions clearly are not. His fists are clenched, his jaw set, and I think he's ready to attack the leader of the underground. Flora looks over her shoulder, surprised, and Flint lets me go abruptly. The two men stare at each other for a long, tense moment. Then Flint takes a step back. You know this girl? Flint asks, keeping a more respectful distance from me. And Lachlan. She's my friend, I say. Lark's head is turned toward me now, and I want to rip the bag off her head, comfort her, but I don't quite dare. I thought you said she was kept strictly in her house all her life, Flint says to Lachlan. She was, until just a few days ago. I don't know who this girl is, though. She's my brother's best friend, I explain. I met her when I snuck out. She knows I'm a second child, but she'd never tell. Ever. She's an outer circle girl, and she helps people. I really don't know what Lark does, but I know she's somehow involved in resisting the center.
What was she doing snooping outside? Flint wants to know.
Why don't you ask her instead of beating her? I say, looking levelly at Flint. Then I slip between the two men. No one tries to stop me when I start to fumble with the cords that tie the wet canvas bag around Lark's neck. The water has made the knots swell, though, and I can't undo them.
Here, let me, Lachlan says, and whips out a folding knife with a curved blade.
He slices cleanly through the ropes, and I trust him so much I never even worry how close the deadly edge is to my friend's neck. I pull the bag off, and strangely, it is Lachlan she sees first. The two people I've kissed, meeting face to face in these strange circumstances. Then she looks at me, and her face floods with relief.
You're alive,
she gasps. I use the hem of my shirt to blot her face dry.
What are you doing here, Lark?
I ask, very close to her ear, so close it is almost a kiss.
I've been looking for you. I had all my contacts from the edge searching.
You're with the edge?
Lachlan interrupts.
Bunch of amateurs, Flint mutters. Deluded do-gooders.
Lachlan shoots him a disdainful look.
At least they're trying. What's wrong with trying to do good? Anything is better than nothing. Until they get in our way, or expose us, or bring the center sniffing around where it doesn't belong.
What is the edge? I ask. Lark answers. The edge is the opposite of the center. We try to bring people together, people of all circles, all incomes, all educations.
A social club, Flint scoffs.
Lark looks at him furiously. So impassioned, even though she's still tied down, that my heart thrills for her courage and strength.
We're doing what we can. We let inner circle people know about the problems the outer circle people face. We raise money. We try to help the poor. We hide rebels. We help second children.
Flint looks incredulous.
What second children have you ever helped?
Rowan, of course. She's the first I ever met. Ever since then, members of the Edge have been keeping an eye on her house, following her when she sneaks out to make sure she's safe.
I feel my heart sink in my chest as Lachlan and I exchange looks.
You told someone about me? Only a very few trusted members of the Edge. I've known them for years. They're absolutely reliable.
You idiot!
Lachlan thunders. He steps toward Lark, looking furious, and for a second I'm afraid for her. But then I see once again that he's getting between Flint and his intended target. Lachlan is angry, but when I see Flint's face, I start to shake. He looks murderous. I think if Lachlan wasn't between them, his hands would already be around Lark's throat.
Lark, I say softly, how could you do that to me?
Her face falls.
I thought I was helping you. I trust them.
Then you trust a traitor, Flint snarls at her. Which makes you a traitor too.
He jabs a forefinger in my direction.
This girl lived in perfect safety until you told one of your trusted friends about her. Now her mother is dead because of you. The center is hunting her because of you.
I didn't mean to.
And did your Edge friends follow you here? Are they alerting the center now?
She shakes her head, looking desperately at me. I'm confused, and turn away from Lark even as her flowing tears beg me to comfort her. I never truly believed that she would betray me. And this,
She didn't mean to, I know, but it is still her fault that Mom was gunned down in the street. I trusted her. Rowan, I'm sorry, she wails, pulling at the cords that still tie her, as if she would fly into my arms if she were free. I start to walk away, but I can't. She made a mistake, I say firmly to Flint and Lachlan. She thought she was helping me, but she didn't turn me in. She didn't betray me. I look at her sweet, sorrowful face. I trust her, I say, and I'm absolutely certain that what I'm saying is true. Trust, Flint spits, scowling. Then he seems to relax and shrugs slightly. What motivated the girl doesn't matter. She's here now, and done is done. Flora, get patrols up to monitor the streets outside the entrance, and put everyone on alert. I want sidearms carried at all times by everyone over 12 years old until further notice. She nods brusquely and leaves to make it so. And now I think you should go too, Rowan, Flint says, and a sudden deliberate gentleness in his voice gives me pause. I'm not going anywhere, I say staunchly. You don't need to see this. You've been through enough. Perplexed, I look to Lachlan. Do you really need to do this? Lachlan asks his leader. She's been in the underground, and she's not a second child. What other choice is there? He turns to me again. Rowan, go. Then he opens a drawer in a rolling cart and takes out a syringe. Lark understands before me. No, please, she shrieks. I'll never tell anyone, I swear. I'll tell them I was lying about Rowan, that she's not a second child. I'll leave the edge forever. No, you can't. She twists in her bonds, trying to get as far away from Flint as possible. Rowan, please, you can't let him kill me. I stare at Flint in disbelief. I know it's hard for you to understand, Flint says. But we can't let anyone know about us. Not yet, and not for a long time. We've managed to keep this place secret. I won't put all of us, all the children and families, the tree, in jeopardy because of one stupid girl. Maybe she just made a dumb mistake. But dumb is deadly, and we can't take any chances. The girl has to die. I hurl myself on top of her, protecting her with my body. Lachlan, I beg in a whisper. He looks torn. Flint, I appreciate everything you do to keep us safe, but she's just a young girl, not a green shirt or a center official. There has to be another way. You don't even know how she found the underground yet. No, Flint admits. Flora reported that she hadn't yet elicited that information from the girl. He looks at Lark with a touch of grudging respect. She withstood interrogation well. Then let's find that out first. How she came here, and why she came here, without beating her. Then, when we're all cooler, we can decide what to do with her. You're just delaying the inevitable, prolonging the suffering for Rowan and the girl, Flint says. There's only one option. There are always more options, Lachlan insists. Flint agrees, obviously reluctantly, and I hold Lark's hand while he and Lachlan ask her questions. The Edge member assigned to keep a discreet watch on my house followed us when Mom and I went to get my lens implants. They saw everything. The roadblock, Mom's murder, but couldn't help me without giving themselves away. They gave Lark my last known location, and she came searching for me, along with other members of the Edge who were in on the secret of my existence. But no one could find a trace of me. In despair, Lark went to her star tower, the glorious rooftop where I got my very first, very confusing kiss. And there, by strange coincidence, she looked down over the edge to the city below, and saw me. She was sure she was imagining it. Of all the vast number of people in Eden, how could it be that she happened to spy the one person she was searching for? She almost stayed on the rooftop, knowing it was only wishful thinking. But in the end, she dashed down the stairs. She lost us for a long time, but finally spotted Lachlan and me just as we were slithering through the grate that led to the underground. How could she know me from so high up, I wondered. I had been up there at night, of course, but even in daylight, I doubt I could have picked out any one person from so high up. Could her story be true? I want to believe it.
No one else knows, she swears. Just me, and it was just luck.
Why did you want to find Rowan so badly? Lachlan asks.
I didn't just want to find her. I needed to find her.
You care about her so much? Lachlan asks, half respectful and, I think, half suspicious.
I do, Lark says amid her tears. And I had to tell her something.
What? I ask, coming closer.
It's your brother, Rowan. They've got him.
My heart seems to sink in my chest with a sick thud.
Who?
I ask, knowing only too well.
The green shirts came for him when you were missing. They dragged him out of his classroom.
I can't believe it.
Not Ash. Not poor, weak, innocent, loving Ash. His trial was already held, quickly and in secret. He's going to be executed in 3 days.
My hand covers my mouth.
He's done nothing wrong.
Holding back sobs, I force myself to ask.
And my father? Has he been arrested too?
Oh, Rowan, Lark says with such sorrow, you think I was the one bound in the torture chamber, my death looming.
Your father is the one who condemned him.
Untie her, I say, and when no one makes a move, I scream. Let her go now! I feel like I'm losing it. Not Ash. Not sweet, gentle Ash.
Rowan, I think you should...
Flint begins.
No!
I shout, and I'm surprised at my own strength, standing up to these two men. Where Ash is concerned, I can do anything.
She's going free, and she's going to help me rescue Ash.
I stare evenly at Lachlan.
And you're going to help us.
Out of the question, Flint answers for him. Even if we let her live, and that is still very doubtful, she can never leave the underground. We can't take the risk. And I'm very sorry about your brother, but we simply can't help him. Neither can you. You can't stop me from trying to save my brother.
My voice comes out in a snarl, fury rising up my throat.
We most certainly can. It won't be pleasant, but we can lock you up, drug you, whatever it takes to protect the underground from exposure.
You mean I'm a prisoner?
I thought this was supposed to be a free society, where second children could lead normal lives.
There is no such thing as normal on this earth anymore, Lachlan interjects. I ignore him.
You're all about protecting second children, right? Well, my mother and brother have been protecting one for 16 years. My mom gave her life protecting one. My brother has been arrested because he kept me safe for so long. You have to help him.
Rowan, Lachlan says very gently, your brother must be in the center prison. I'm so sorry for him, and for you. To lose everyone important to you all at once, he breaks off. And I see his eyes glisten with tears that don't fall. He blinks them quickly away.
But there's nothing we can do. There's no way any of us can get inside the center prison.
I can get you in, Lark says.
We listen to her idea. It sounds feasible, but...
No, it wouldn't work,
Lachlan says.
That would get us in, but... Once we're inside, we'd have to maneuver within the building. We'd need IDs, clearance. None of our contacts have that kind of power. We'd have to have someone very high up on the inside to give us security codes, access passes.
I think for a moment.
Someone like the next Vice Chancellor?
I ask. They look at me in surprise, as I let them know my father has been handpicked by the Chancellor to be his second in command.
But he would never help you.
Lachlan protests.
Not if what Lark says is true,
he asks Lark.
Did he really turn in his own son?
She nods.
My father overheard some center officials talking about it, though I don't think anyone outside the government knows yet.
I don't know how he managed to protect himself, but your father's job, and his life, are secure. And he's the one who signed his own son's death warrant. I hear Lachlan suck in his breath, feel his hand on my arm. I shake him off. I don't need your pity. I need your help. I know my father is a wicked man who would do anything to save himself. No, that's not quite true. I never, ever imagined he would do this to Ash, his beloved son. I always knew he would have turned on me, turned me in, if it wasn't that Mom and Ash would have suffered too. But Ash, I wouldn't have thought it possible, even from him. We can't help you, Lachlan says again, so gently. It's an impossible mission. Suicide. We can't put what we have here, and our future plans, at risk. I can see the strain in him. The tension of believing that two opposing things are absolutely right. He wants to save Ash, for my sake. And because Ash helped a second child. And I think because Lachlan simply believes that it's his duty to help people in need. But he also has an unshakable commitment to the underground. To keep it safe, no matter what the price. He would give his own life for the underground. He will give Ash's life, too. Would he give my life? I wonder. Not can't, I correct him. Won't. I stare at him without flinching so he will understand how deadly serious I am. If you won't help me, I won't help you. For a moment, Lachlan's mouth works without uttering a sound as he tries to process, to come up with an argument. But I think I see something in his eyes that tells me he approves. He can't go along with it, but if I give him no other choice. Flint spins me around by the shoulder, and this time Lachlan doesn't intervene. I think I understand why. What do you mean? I regard him coldly. I mean simply this. If you don't help me rescue my brother, I won't help you get the implants you need from the cybersurgeon. Flint starts to fume and sputter, a far cry from the collected leader I've come to know. This is preposterous! We take you in when you have no one, nowhere else to go. You depend on us. If it wasn't for us, you and every other second child would be dead. And you think you can defy us? My only reaction is to blink once. You heard me, I say evenly. You stupid girl, do you think we won't make you tell us what you know? I raise my eyebrows slightly, though I can already feel my lungs tighten. You tried that before, I tell him, trying to throw as much disdain into my voice as I can. Didn't get very far, did you? As I recall, you didn't get any useful information out of me, even when I thought you were a center official. What do you think you'll get now that I know you're just a cringing second child skulking in an underground lair, with my brother's very life at stake? I'm talking so much more bravely than I feel. You'd break, Flint says, but he doesn't sound so sure. She would, Lachlan says to my surprise. But how long would it take? We need to get those lenses soon, particularly if there's any risk that the traitor in the Edge might know about us. We need to set our plan in motion, and it can only work if I have the lenses. Of course, you can break her, eventually. But what if it takes days? What if she dies in the process? I know exactly what he's doing, but I give no sign. Flint looks uncertain, and the uncertainty makes him angry. I don't know much about government. But I don't think easy anger is a good thing in a leader. You want to save what you love, I point out. So do I. Outside, Flint snaps to Lachlan and turns on his heel. Lachlan follows, and as he passes me, he winks. Alone, I wrap my arms around Lark and hold her tight. I can feel her body trembling, and I embrace her until the tremors start to subside. What is this place? She asks. Maybe I shouldn't tell her anything. What she already knows, or must have figured out by now, could get her killed. But she's my friend, and she should know. She made a mistake revealing secrets before. She'll know to be more careful now. It's called the Underground. It was designed as a backup for Eden, if anything went wrong. Now it's a secret sanctuary for second children. Her face lights up, as if she's forgotten all about her torture, her uncertain fate. You have a home. A place just for you. I'm so happy for you. But her face falls, and I can see her lively mind calculating. But won't I be able to see you? Won't you be able to leave, or can't I visit? Lark, there's so much I don't know yet. I don't know what the Edge does, but the Underground is serious. A lot of lives depend on this place, and keeping it a secret. She looks a little sulky, then shakes her head, her lilac hair lashing her cheeks. You'll sneak out, she says with confidence, a mischievous smile on her face. You'll come to me. I know you will. And even in the middle of danger and doubt, I feel the irresistible pull of her, and know that no matter what happens, no matter what the risk, I'll try to see her again. Lachlan comes in, stopping short when he sees us embracing, our faces so near, Lark's eyes sparkling. The quick frown darkens his brow, clearing almost before I know it's there. I pull away from Lark awkwardly, one finger catching in a snarl of her disheveled hair. I don't know which one of them to look at. I owe so much to both of them. But what I feel for both of them doesn't stem strictly from obligation. Feelings, new and strange, swirl in me, and right now there's only one thing I can do. Ignore them. It's like being awed by the grandeur of a mountain peak and fearing the coming struggle to climb it, while you're still fording the raging river at its base. The mountain of Lachlan and Lark, of their kisses, looms, inescapable before me. But it's not immediate, and I have to turn my mind away from it.
So?
I ask, making myself defiant with my hands on my hips.
Flint has agreed,
he begins, and by a quirk of his mouth I can tell the more accurate words would be, has been persuaded,
to let me help you rescue Ash.
With a quick gasp of relief, I reach for him, and stop myself.
With certain conditions, he adds. First, Lark will be drugged before we leave. She'll be unconscious, and when she wakes, she probably won't be able to remember much of the last 24 hours. Is that acceptable?
I look to Lark, and she nods.
Not that we don't trust you, but, he narrows his eyes at her, people make mistakes.
She bows her head, cringing.
I'll come for you later. You'll get me inside the center, and you will never make any attempt to find the Underground or contact Rowan again.
But, both Lark and I say at the same time.
Never. If you're seen anywhere near any of our entrances, or in Rowan's company, you'll be killed. No second chances.
But she's my friend, I protest. Lark doesn't object, just takes my hand and gives me a look that says, agree, for now. I've snuck out. I've risked myself to be with her before. Later, anything can happen. For now, Ash is my priority. That and making sure Lark leaves the Underground safely. Raging River first. The mountain will always be there. And then I think, did that condition that Lark and I never meet again come from Flint? Or from Lachlan? A pleasant-looking young man with bottle-green second-child eyes comes in with a syringe, and Lark holds out her arm obligingly. See you on the other side, she says, and it is only as the clear liquid plunges into her vein that the thought occurs to me. I whirl to Lachlan in a panic.
It's just to make her unconscious, right? Not the lethal syringe?
Rowan, what do you take me for? He looks genuinely hurt.
Swear it!
I cry, grabbing him by the shirt front. He takes hold of my hands.
Rowan, I swear it. Trust me.
Why does everyone keep saying that to me? It isn't long before Lark starts to drift off. As her eyes grow heavy, I give her a kiss on the cheek. On the periphery of my vision, I see Lachlan avert his eyes. A little while later, a large man comes in and scoops Lark up like a limp doll. I feel an emptiness when he takes her away.
He'll bring her to her house. She should be reviving at that point. She can let herself in, and with luck, forget about her little adventure in the underground.
But remember enough to help us. He looks at me for a long moment.
I think that girl would do anything for you.
I bite my lip and don't know what to say.
How did you convince Flint?
I ask instead, changing the subject in what I hope isn't a too obvious way.
Lachlan laughs, and it's such a relief to see.
I like the smiling, joking Lachlan. He makes me so comfortable, so happy. I just don't know how to react to the other Lachlans. The fighter. The leader. The man.
Lachlan drops his voice to a low, confidential murmur. I think what got him was the very real possibility that I might die in this raid on the center. We've always butted heads, and you know he thinks he should be the one to get the implants, and alter our plan. So he's letting me help you. Me, alone. His reasoning is this. When I don't come back, when I failed in the rescue, our part of the bargain will be done. We tried, and now you'll have to take him to the cybersurgeon.
What a merciless man Flint is. The fight to save second children shouldn't be a power struggle between its two most charismatic leaders. I wouldn't give him the lenses if you didn't make it. He touches my shoulder, then seems to realize what he's doing and jerks his hand away. You held out admirably before, but make no mistake. He would have made you talk. His ways are not my ways. I don't believe that causing pain can ever bring about a better society. Death, perhaps, under certain circumstances. But there's enough cruelty and suffering in the world. I won't add more if I can help it.
I feel such a warmth for him, filling my chest, spreading along my limbs, making my fingertips tingle. Why is my body reacting in such a visceral way? Why is it reacting to two different people? Is it only that I've never met anyone before? Maybe I'm enamored of the idea of people.
Isn't there something you can do to get the better of Flint? I ask.
A girl after my own heart, he says with a wink.
I feel my cheeks flush.
There's no convincing Flint to help you. Or help me, for that matter. But there is certainly a way to force the issue, with your help.
He leans close and whispers in my ear.
So, if you're agreeable, we're going to turn the tables on Flint. Tonight we go to the cybersurgeon and get my lenses.
I have a flash of suspicion. If I help him, and then afterward he refuses to help me save Ash. But no, I trust him.
And then, not only will it be too late for Flint to get the lenses for himself, but I'll be so valuable to the underground that they won't dare risk letting me break into the center alone. He'll have to commit a few people to help me. I'll have a much better chance of success with a little backup.
It was brilliant, and I beamed with him. But one thing was wrong. Not just help you, I say. Us. I'm going too. And though he tries for a long time, nothing he says can dissuade me. I won't let him go alone into danger.
So many things. So fast. I stultified for 16 years, and now a lifetime of danger and grief, and wonder and emotion are all compressed within a few days. We set out shortly afterward by a different passageway than the one I'd entered through. We enter a labyrinth of winding, confusing tunnels that double back on themselves. Once we come to what looks like a dead end, but Lachlan shifts a rock, and a low stone door slides open on silent pneumatic hinges. We crawl for a while, then come to a place we can stand again. I'm utterly lost, but Lachlan knows the way unerringly. I'm supposed to be snug in my bed while Lachlan takes the risk for me. I can't quite believe that Flint hoped, or nearly hoped, that Lachlan would fail. Lachlan, though, seems perfectly confident as he sneaks me out of the underground by a series of twisting, gradually rising passages. Excited. Bouncy, even.
You just don't know what this means to us,
he must say a dozen times as we make our way to the surface.
Having real lenses will change everything.
I want to know how, exactly, but whenever I ask, he is vague, or changes the subject. I know he wants to infiltrate the highest level as an elite student, but what else? What next? I feel a swell of resentment. I've trusted him so many times. With Lark's life. With the secret of my lenses. I understand the danger of confiding in anyone. Look what happened when Lark told people she trusted about me. But when I'm the one shut out of secrets, it hurts. The next to last circle, I tell him definitively as we step out into the blackness. Eden doesn't respond to him any more than it does to me, and the ground at our feet stays dark. He looks at me, apparently amused.
So you remember now?
I don't know whether to pretend anymore or not, so I only look at him sidelong. It's all coming back to me. Slowly. He laughs, a low chuckle that warms me.
As long as you're on my side, I don't mind if you take your time telling the truth. Believe me, I get it.
It's strange how walking around Eden feels almost natural now. True, we sneak and skulk in the shadows, avoiding the few souls abroad tonight. But to be out, to move, to be part of the city now feels normal. The danger exists, but that feels normal too, somehow. My body feels alive, eager, tingling with excitement. I feel ready. We emerge only one circle away from our destination, and it isn't long before we cross the radius and head right, toward the east side. There's a modification parlor somewhere around here. Serpentine, it's called. Mom's words are burned clearly on my memory.
I know that place, Lachlan says. It's very popular with the bestial crowd. But I had no idea there were shady dealings going on there. It's not a great neighborhood, but the place has an air of respectability. Now, if you just told me it was the Serpentine in the first place, you could be back in your nice safe bed dreaming of a better world. Dreaming gets you nowhere, I tell him as we walk. I want to make a better world, even if there's not much for me to do.
You're giving up your lenses. He stops in the middle of the dark street and turns to me.
The look on his face is one of respect, and maybe, I think, a little bit of awe.
You're giving up your chance to be part of a world you must have longed to join all your life. You could walk away from the underground, from me, from all of us, and take your chances up here in Eden, with your new eyes and maybe even the family your mom set you up with.
I look at him skeptically. I got the impression Flint wouldn't have given me a choice. A hard look flashes across his face, but then he cracks a smile. He makes light of things whenever he can.
I think you've gathered by now that Flint and I have slightly different approaches. Your lenses may very well save the underground, and change Eden forever. But I believe in free will, and self-determination. Those things are at the core of what we're fighting for. If you had decided you didn't want to give up your lenses, I wouldn't have forced you.
That hard look casts another quick shadow across his face.
And if Flint had tried, I would have stopped him.
I wonder when this conflict between Lachlan and the leader of the underground will break into all-out war, and what it might mean for the secret world of Second Children. But I can't worry about that now, or about the dozens of other things plaguing my mind right now. We've come to Serpentine. It is, as Mom described it, a glaringly orange building. Unlike most other structures in this overall, squalid, next-to-outermost ring, Serpentine is gently illuminated, a golden glow holding back the dark. In there, I would have become normal. In there, I would have found a real life. But one away from my family, my first friend. A life, sure, but it would really just be a different kind of lie. Another kind of hiding. No, I decide, firmly and absolutely. I don't want the lenses. I don't want to be part of a society that doesn't want me.
since there's no scenario in my future that doesn't have me hunted, a pariah. I'd rather just commit wholeheartedly to being what I am. A second child, among other second children. A sense of relief washes over me. I'd been perfectly willing to give up my lenses to Lachlan and his cause, but that had been a rational decision. Now it was an emotional, gut choice, too. I realize I'm so much happier at the prospect of just being me, with my vivid second-child eyes, not something altered and corrupted by the center. Changing just to fit in someplace I only now realize I don't really want to be. The electrified fence around the modification center gives off a low, menacing hum. Lachlan cocks his head up at it. I wish you'd told me about the electricity ahead of time. It's gonna take me a while to disable it, and I don't want to be outside here any longer than necessary. I can get us in, I tell him, and repeat Mom's instructions. They turn off the electricity to the third panel from the left on the southeast side. I have a moment of doubt. Southwest. He gives me a wry look. You do know the voltage level is very likely fatal, don't you? Southeast. I'm sure of it. Fairly sure. It's off between 3 and 4 in the morning. He checks his watch and nods. I guess this place has dealings with a few people on the wrong side of the law. Nice of them to give their friends a back door inside. He leads me around the back of the building, and we count 3 chain-link superconductive panels from the left. I lean close to try and listen for the telltale buzz of a charge, but the whole thing is humming, and I can't tell if this panel is deactivated. I look around for some debris to test it with. Maybe if we throw something at the fence, we'd see a spark? I'm not really sure how this works. Can we... I begin uncertainly, but in what I'm beginning to realize is a characteristically Lachlan approach, he hurls himself at the fence, and doesn't sizzle to death. He grins over his shoulder at me. Coming? I can't help laughing. And then, I can't help racing him to the top. Despite his head start, my hand clasps the top before his. I feel strong. Capable. We drop down on the far side and make our way to the back door. As Mom told me, I knock twice up on the high corner of the door, pause for a breath, and knock 3 times near the bottom. There's a long, tense wait, and finally, we hear footsteps approaching from within. I don't know what I was expecting. A middle-aged scientist, a business-like doctor in a white coat. We're greeted by a young woman with red hair pulled severely back from her face, her eyes heavily lined in black, in an otherwise bone-pale face. Her paleness is further set off by her all-white clothes. She's not wearing the traditional doctor's coat I'm used to seeing my dad in, but rather an edgy ensemble of strange angles, accented with sleek steel fastenings. Against all that stark whiteness, her slicked-back hair is like a lava flow, her eyes like burning coals. She stares, no, glares at me for a moment. Then her eyes widen slightly. "Pick, where the hell have you been?" she hisses. "And who the hell are you?" She turns those smoldering eyes on Lachlan. "I'm..." he begins, but she obviously has no patience for an answer. She grabs us each by an arm and jerks us inside. "I don't want to know who you are. And Rowan, I know quite well. At least from your mother, and from physical schematics of you. I'm Flame." The name suits her perfectly. "Why didn't you show up yesterday?" she demands. In as steady a voice as I can manage, I tell her about the roadblock. Mom's murder. "She said someone was on to you," the cyber surgeon muses. "Pick!" she swears again, stalking away from us. We drift in her wake. I should have destroyed the lenses the second there was even a hint of trouble. "You didn't, though, did you?" Lachlan asks, and Flame looks at him sharply. "What does it matter to you?" "Never mind." She turns to me. "Are you ready? The procedure will take about an hour, but we'll have to monitor you for a while afterward. Then follow-up visits for 12 weeks. It will be 6 months at least before the lenses fully bond to your neurons, and you'll need a final check after that. Until then, if they're removed or damaged, you'll have to start from scratch."
After that, they'll be a permanent part of your body. But don't do anything to screw this up, because this is the only pair I've successfully made. And frankly, after I implant them, I'm out of this business. I don't need the trouble. The money, yes, but not the risk of death. I try to get a word in edgewise through the whole monologue, but I don't have a hope until she runs out of steam. Then I finally blurt out, I'm not taking the lenses. I want Locke, my friend, to have them. I realize just in time that I probably shouldn't give his name. She doesn't even stop walking. Nope, not gonna happen. I trot to catch up. But I don't want them, and he needs them. She dramatically pantomimes, blocking her ears. I don't want to hear it. I got paid enough to move Serpentine 3 rings in, and that's the only social issue that matters to me. You go fight the center, or turn yourself into a turtle, or feed the hungry, or uplift the poor. It's all the same to me. Just don't tell me. You don't need to know why, I try again. Just give them to him, not me. Kid, don't you understand? These are your lenses. Yours. No one else's. I know my mom paid, but this isn't about money. She gives a mirthless chuckle. First and last time those words will ever pass my lips. Do you realize that no one outside the center has ever successfully made lenses that will bond to the individual? That will feed into the ecopan like these do? This is my masterpiece. Me, with all my training and degrees, who spends her life implanting horns and scales into bestials, finally came up with something brilliant. These are not just any lenses. Your mom gave me scans of your eyes, your brain, a personality assessment, basal temperature readings, metabolic data. These are custom made for you. They won't work in anyone else. I'm stunned. I don't know what to think. At one point, I was desperate for a normal life. But when that became impossible, I decided I absolutely didn't want the lenses. I want to stay me. My eyes. My identity. Even if I have to hide it all my life. Even if I have to die for it. I'm about to say, forget it. Destroy them. We're leaving. When Lachlan grips my shoulder. I don't think he means to, but he's clutching me so hard it hurts. You have to get the lenses, he says between clenched teeth. You have to take my place. I start to shake my head. No, I begin, but he pulls me out of the room, muttering, excuse us, while the cybersurgeon shrugs and makes a gesture of aggravated dismissal. This is our only chance, he hisses at me the second we're alone. He pulls me so close. I suddenly feel uncomfortably warm. There's a very narrow window, and the way I've set it up, a very narrow age range. Someone our age has to infiltrate the school, the inner circle families, or this entire operation is shot to hell. I'm not like you. I hardly even know what's going on. You're more like me than you realize. I know you have a sense of justice. I know you want fair treatment for second children, and all children of Eden. But I can't. I'm what? What can I do that you can't do, or learn? I'm nothing special. A kid who was kicked around, kept down, until he decided to fight. You're a fighter, Rowan. He rubs his cheek where I punched him. But that was different. I shake my head. I'm just me. Never think that just you isn't enough. Rowan, listen to me. Everything is riding on this. I've prepared for this, trained for this, thought about nothing else for the past year. But I haven't. I don't even know what to do. I don't want to. But he cuts me off, and probably thinks I'm going to say something noble like, I don't want to let you down. But that's not it. I was just getting used to the idea of peace, underground. Of companions, safety. A new family. I'll help you. I'll be with you all the way, or as close as I can get. I'll be your handler. As if to illustrate, he links his fingers through mine. I feel a strange mix of elation and trepidation. My handler. As if I'm a puppet, with him pulling the strings. It will be easy. All you have to do at first is go to school. Make friends. Act normal. A laugh bursts out of me, uncontrollable. That's easy. Until a few days ago, I knew 3 people, of which only 2 liked me. Make friends? Act normal? If you put me in, your mission will fail in the first 5 minutes. He smiles gently and squeezes my fingers in his. You're more charming than you imagine, he says softly. I believe in you, Rowan. Believe in yourself and you can do it. I wouldn't ask if I didn't think you could. The mission is too important to trust someone incompetent. He strokes one of my knuckles with his thumb. And your life is too important to risk if I didn't think you'd succeed. Why? I ask. I'm not fishing for compliments, not asking out of vanity. I really want to know why he values my life so much. He flushes, actually turns pink. His eyes drop to my fingers. Our fingers. I'll just pick one reason, he says, lifting his gaze to mine again, but not releasing my hand. The small room feels warmer than ever. The way you fight for people you care about. For Lark when she was in danger. For your brother. You forget yourself and think only of the person you love. That makes you extraordinary. He sighs, and there's a tremor in that sigh so deeply sad. I only wish once in my life someone had fought for me like that. I only have one question for him. If I say no, will you still help me rescue Ash? Yes, he says without hesitation. And because he says yes, I say yes. Within minutes, I'm in a brightly lit room, being prepped for surgery. A few breaths later, I slip into blackness. And awake to gunfire. Only, I'm not really awake. I can't be, because even though my eyes are open, I'm still seeing dreamlike images. My eyeballs tingle. Not just sensation, but movement. A rapid vibration that is maddening. I see, I don't know, people in a chrome room, sickly with a green glow that seems to emanate from above. Small animals, hairless and pink, helpless in cages. Wires protruding from tubs of bubbling gel. The images dance incoherently, but I can't tell if I'm seeing them with my eyes or my imagination. They're shouting, too, and another bang. Another gunshot? Real or imagined? No, it's the sound of my own body crashing to the floor, jarring every bone. Except my skull. A hand holds my head, saving it from the hard ground. I sense a warm pressure on me, and feel unaccountably safe. Finally, my vision comes into focus, and I see Lachlan. He's pressed against me, holding me down on the floor. I smile. I don't know which parts are real, but this feels right. We have to get you out of here, Lachlan says. Did you hurt yourself when you fell? The hand that's not cupping my head begins to feel along my body. I giggle when he brushes my ribs. The strange look he gives me when I do suddenly cues me into what's real, what's not. Gunfire. I had my lens implant surgery. We're under attack. I look around wildly from my prone position. I'm practically under the operating table. Strange, sharp instruments are scattered on the floor around me. I try to get up, but Lachlan holds me down. They're at the front. 2, maybe 3 green shirts. Luckily, your talented cyber surgeon is also a skilled hacker, and seems to have modified a couple of security bots to do her bidding, and they're keeping the green shirts at bay. Can you stand? I was trying to, I say testily, after images of some strange room haunting me, stamped on the back of my eyelids. There's no sign of flame. There's a gun in his hand. I don't even know where he wore it. I didn't see a trace of it on his body. We have to get out of here. He's looking at me strangely, and my hand creeps to my eyes. I want to see them, but it isn't exactly an opportunity to find a mirror. They're puffy and tender, but the world looks the same as ever through them now.
Those other images must have been a hangover.